We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 253. I friggin' hate Tropicana Field. My God. The Yankees, that is a house of horrors down there.
The place is an absolute dump. It's a joke. It's a circus. It's a big top tent. There's a circus going on underneath it. The Yankees don't know how to play in a circus, apparently. The Tampa Bay Rays are pulling their pitcher to play third base and going back to the pitcher. Then the pitcher's going back to third base to field the ball. Can't field the ball. Won't throw the ball. Yankees don't do anything against the 19 pitchers per game that the Tampa Bay Rays are throwing out there. The place is a freaking joke. I think we're playing not baseball when we're in that place. I don't know what we're playing, but it's not baseball.
That's not baseball, Susan. The Rays is not baseball, Susan. But at the same time, it is getting the most out of a very, very thin roster, especially now where I saw their depth chart tweeted out after the Eovaldi trade. Their only starting pitcher who is currently healthy is Archer.
They don't even have starting pitchers. the crazy thing about that team is that, I mean, I got to give a lot of credit to Kevin Cash. Kevin Cash is doing a phenomenal job with that team. I don't know if this whole bullpenning thing was thrown on him or it was, you know, partially his idea, if he's, you know, on board with this whole Joe Madden-esque type of charade that they have going on in Tampa Bay. But he's doing a good job. They have a lot of young players who I think everybody, including me, especially me, underestimated, their abilities. And these guys are definitely using that, I think, as a chip on their shoulder, and they're playing good baseball. I mean, offensively, they have some guys who can do some damage that nobody has any idea who they are. And, you know, it's working occasionally. I mean, they're a better than average team right now.
I know. It's still no excuse, though, for the way the Yankees have been playing, especially how they've played this season in Tampa. I think this.
I'm not building this team up to say that they're better than we expected, so we should lose to them. That's not what I'm saying by any means.
Yeah.
Still think we should win 19 games against the Tampa Bay freaking Devil Rays.
That prediction backfired.
God damn it! I mean, what do you expect when we do bold predictions? I'm putting the kibosh on bold predictions in the winter because all it does is make me step out and say something stupid that I don't really believe.
No, we just go big or go home, Scott. We go bolder next winter. But I think this is the first point in the season, with everything that's happened this week. The Yankees are playing mediocre baseball. We've got the whole debacle with Gary Sanchez, Hustlegate. We've got also trades happening. It has been a wild couple days for the Yankees on Yankee social media. It has really been almost exhausting following everything that's been going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. Plus, you have to like decipher through what is actual news, what is just fluff, what is clickbait, what is real reporting. Now that like half the reporters are no longer with their beats any longer because there are major layoffs in the New York papers too. Like, so you got to find out like what is actually happening. It's very hard to, especially when you're on. If you go to like the Bronx Pinstripes Twitter and you're trying to comb through things, it's impossible.
Oh, God.
Impossible.
You got to set up some lists on that bad boy.
Yeah. I'm not going to tell you that we need one because we do already have one. There's burner accounts out there that, you know, allow us to see the real news. Okay. Just leave that there.
But, like you also get like the assholes on Twitter that not only make the fake accounts, but also retweet old tweets that will definitely dupe you. Like that Jay Happ, tweet from 2014 and the Mariners and, a couple of our guys got taken on that one.
It's happened a couple of times. There's like a fake Yankees PR one that got us like a month ago too. It's with the fake check mark. Like they put some kind of a blue emoji thing in there. Get a job.
It's going to be a very busy episode coming up. Scott, you spoke with Connor Foley, who is covers the Rail Riders for the Scranton Times Tribune. That is going to be the second half of this episode, so everybody stay tuned for that. But also just want to quickly talk about the BP Crew event on Sunday evening. It was rained out. The game was rained out. Last we recorded, Scott was half dead. I was on my way to the event, so I haven't had a chance to talk about that. You know, it didn't work out. The game got rained out. It was something I was hoping as I was getting in the cab to go to the Bronx Brewery, it started to downpour and I just had a bad feeling. The rain was trying to hold off, and then you could just tell once it got to be 8 o'clock. The tarp was on the field. There were no grounds crew in sight. You knew it was bad news.
Yeah, nobody even went out to the bullpen. I mean, it was unfortunate. And the news, the weather was looked like doom and gloom from like a week out, even longer than that. People knew there was this big front coming in, and there were some pockets of hope, but they closed very quickly. And yeah, it's couldn't get it in. It's unfortunate. It's the first one that we've had rained out. It's one of those situations where I've dreaded every single event. Unfortunately, I wasn't there to be there with everybody. I would have liked to be in the misery with you guys. I truly would have.
Well, it wasn't necessarily misery.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, the fact that there's not a game, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's like captain going down with a ship. I feel like I should be there, although I was dead to the absolute world. So, I appreciate everybody, hanging in there.
Yeah, you standing out in the downpour rain would not have been a good move on your part, but it was, no one was miserable. Everyone was still having a great time. A ton of people showed up to the pregame party at the brewery. New faces, old faces. It was great to see everybody and try to mingle and talk to as many people as possible. And then as the game was in the rain delay, we were at the stadium for maybe an hour and a half while it was just raining. We were all standing underneath and back of the section, getting beers, getting food, just talking. So it was still a really fun time. I had a fun evening. It just, you know, it didn't work out for the game. And you have a quick update on some tickets, because I know some people have been asking about that.
Yeah, so the way that the tickets are, it's pretty standard for a rainout. And again, I'm sending an email out. I was going to send one out today after I heard back from our ticket rep. I just haven't had a chance, so I'm going to send it out very soon. But the way that the tickets work is the rainout is August 13th. That's the scheduled date. If you cannot make that date, you have that ticket. It's your ticket. You can sell that ticket if you want to, or you can use the credit for that ticket to go towards another game that you can attend. And that can be done at the box office. And I think you can do it all the way through, I want to say like July 2019, but through next year. So it's not like you're going to lose a ticket. You don't lose the value of the ticket. You can put it towards a game. Even if you can't attend the rain scheduled, the new date, you could put it towards any other game that you can attend. So I think they have some restrictions on like premium games and things like that. If it's not this particular game, but that's it. That's
really the only restriction. That August 13th game, that's a Monday. That's still going to be a Subway Series game. I'm going to be there. So if you guys are still going, hit me up, let me know. I'm going to be in section 205. Hopefully we get a good number of people who were originally going to come to the event at that makeup game. It's still going to be a ton of fun. I'll probably tweet out a location, maybe where we can meet beforehand, grab a few drinks. It won't be an official BP crew pregame party, but it'll still be a little gathering.
Well, I think it'll be a bigger than a little, because I have everybody's email address who signed up for the tickets and all that too.
There you go.
We'll communicate through there as well to make sure that there's a good, you know, meet up at a bar before the game too, and we'll make another little thing of it. But again, it's not going to be like we're not going to go through the whole gamut that we did the first time. So the next event that we are going to be doing that's the one you can go get your tickets to now. That's August 18th. That's the 1998 celebration reunion game where they go out and they, you know, celebrate the team and recognize all the players. They walk out from center field and do a whole thing. The tickets are on the website. Go get your tickets. That's going to be a lot of fun. And then we have one more after that in September. That one is not on the website now, but it will be this week at some point. I'm actually getting everything up. So two more events to close out the season. And then I can guarantee this, guys, if we do make the playoffs, and I'm knocking on wood.
Oh, boy. This is where we are at this point right now.
I'm not jinxing. No. You know where we are right now? I'm not jinxing anything. That's where we are right now. So that's why I'm speaking like this. If we do make the playoffs, we will have we have the ability to get a lot of these tickets if we get them, you know, with certain quantities. So we did it last year for the wild card game. I think we had, I don't even remember how many it was, like 30, 40
people. I think we
had
20. No, we had, I think we had 20
seats. I think it
was
more than that. Okay. Either way, we had a solid amount of, and that was like a very last minute thing. This one, hopefully we have a little bit more time to plan out, and we could put it out there and get a good group for section 205, 206 for any of the playoff games too. So the difference is that I got to buy all these tickets, you know, well ahead of time. That's just the way it works. But again, we'll figure that out when the time comes. But that's also on the docket. So keep that in mind. If you are anticipating going to a playoff game, I guarantee you're not going to get a better deal than if you did it through us. That's a fact.
All right. I have three bad stats is what I'm calling them, that are kind of highlighting how the Yankees are playing recently. The first being is that they're 500 against Tampa and 500 against Baltimore. 6-6 versus Tampa, 5-5 against Baltimore. We all know that story. It's been beaten to death. But it is absolutely right now the reason they are so far behind the Red Sox, because the Sox are 9-4 against Tampa and 10-2 against Baltimore. So that's the first bad stat. At the end of the season, if we look and we're 2-3 games behind the Red Sox and we don't win the division, that is the reason why, because the Red Sox took care of business against crap teams and the Yankees could not. Stat number two, the Yankees have only won more than two games, have not won more than two games since June 21st. So it's been a long stretch of win one, lose one, win two, lose two. A lot of mediocrity in there. Then the last stat, the Yankees only have one home run since the All-Star break. That's Aaron Judge on Saturday, which I actually had to like triple check because I didn't believe it, because all this team does is hit home runs.
Yeah, I mean, you're not gonna immediately change the way that you score runs after the All-Star break like that. So when you see that there's only one home run since then, you should be looking up and down and not seeing a ton of runs, because it's not like we hit with runners in scoring position. It's not like, you know, they've all of a sudden become a tremendous baseball team and hitting with runners in scoring position after the All-Star break. So that's a big problem.
It's a huge problem,
especially when you rely on it. I mean, you don't want to say that you rely on it, but guess what? We do. We rely on the home run ball to an extent, maybe not completely. I don't think this team is completely relying on the home run ball, but the stats back it up. They say that when we're hitting home runs, we score a lot more runs. And when we're not hitting home runs, there's just not very many runs crossing the plate. Not a big small ball team.
No, and well, they do get quite a few sack flies. I think they lead the league in sack flies, but the runners in scoring position issues, which we've talked about 1,000 times, are really highlighted when the two-run and the three-run home runs are not happening.
Yeah, no, it's an issue. It's an absolute issue, and it's something that, I don't think it's going to last, but I think one of the problems is when you have a big swing-and-miss team, when you have a lot of guys who hit a lot of home runs, and there's not a lot in between. I mean, we've had Gleyber Torres out, who's one of those guys I think that brings a lot of balance to this lineup. He's hit a bunch of home runs this year, but he's not a big home run guy. He's a gap guy. He's going to be a doubles guy. He puts the ball in play. He hits for average. You need those types of players to surround the guys like Judge and Stanton, even though lately they've been hitting for average too. But like, you need those guys in there to be able to supplement the days that they're striking out 3 and 4 times a day. You need the Gleyber Torres. You need the Andujars to go in there and get those doubles, get those base knocks, and go station to station a little bit and play that game. Because, you know, to be efficient as a ball team, as an offense, you got to be able to score in multiple ways. And obviously we're seeing it's becoming a very big problem.
Speaking of Gleyber, they did get him back in the lineup on Wednesday afternoon. Yankees were 45-19 with Gleyber Torres in the lineup this year. And without him, this also includes before he was called up, they're 19-17. So they're barely above 500 without Gleyber Torres. I don't know what to make of that other than the fact that we know Gleyber's a good player. But the team did take off at the end of April when he was called up.
Yeah, whether that's him or, you know, he's just part of the equation, or it was, you know, coincidental timing,
it's
and the
a
fact
nice
that he
little
came up.
Coincidence, I think.
I think it's a nice coincidence. I mean, not to say that he doesn't make a large impact, but his WAR would be stupid if you're looking at a guy like that and you're looking at those wins. I mean, maybe you should write a letter to the Sabermetrics folks and show that, because if that's actually you know, anything to do with Gleyber, then, you know, we need to figure out why that is and bottle that up. But, you know, it's good to have him back, no doubt about it. I mean, he brings stability to that second base spot. He brings another bat into the middle of the lineup. And, you know, he's just an all-around good player. So good to have him back.
And surprisingly, Neil Walker actually held his own for the few weeks.
He started hitting, yeah.
Yeah,
and actually not that surprising, though, right? Because he had relatively constant playing time.
It had been a long time, though, and we had not seen Neil Walker have any signs of life.
But the problem is with him is the way that he's effective for this team is when he doesn't have the constant playing time. So this is we kind of led up to this. We said, I pretty much expected him to hit better, you know, to a certain level when he's getting this time. But that doesn't do anything for us. What does that show us? It shows us nothing, because that's not his role on this team. His role on this team is a secondary player that gets sporadic playing time and sporadic at bats. So if you can't perform under those situations, then what are you to this team besides a guy that can fill in if there's an injury? You know, it's a tough spot to judge what he is then, because he doesn't, his strengths don't play to what we need him to do.
The Yankees have been struggling offensively, like we've said, and the pitching matchups kind of broke in their favor all week with, I know Sunday's game was rained out, so they did not have to face DeGrom. That was going to be a tough matchup. Who knows if DeGrom's either even going to be a Met by the time August 13 rolls around, but there's maybe also just a good likelihood that he doesn't pitch on August 13th. That makeup game does mean, though, the Yankees play 20 straight days from July 31st to August 19th. I don't know if that's a bad thing anymore, because it seems when the schedule is easy, the Yankees don't play well, and then when the schedule is against them, the Yankees do play well. So who knows? Hey, screw it. Maybe that's a good thing for this team.
Yeah, if you're looking in the short term, for sure, like we could see how that's a good thing, because this team does get up. But, you know, that extended time with no days off is extra grind on the body. It's extra, it probably increases percentages of injuries. Like a lot of these things breaking down players towards the end of the season, I mean, all these things got to be in consideration when you're talking about, you know, fewer days off towards the end of a long baseball season.
And the Yankees don't face Blake Snell because he gets scratched. And then your boy Nate Eovaldi, Nasty Nate's going to be pitching up in Fenway for the Red Sox now. He was traded on Wednesday. I don't think you can be the president of the Nate Eovaldi fan club now that he's a Red Sox.
I mean, I told you that ship sailed when he was when he was complaining about the feel of the pitch and the feel of the fastball. Like, all right, you lost me on that one. But it is disappointing to see that they got a relatively quality starter for the back of their rotation for practically nothing.
Their number 15 overall prospect.
Yeah, and their prospect system is shit. So speaking to their 15th prospect, I have no idea what that means. Like, I legitimately don't. I don't know how that quantifies you as a prospect, because if the system's already bad, that's like saying the 15th prospect when Ref Snyder was our number one prospect. Who is that guy? You know what I mean? Like, does that guy exist? Does it matter who that guy is? So they basically got him for nothing, and he's controlled next year, is he not? So
No, I don't think so.
I thought he had one more year on this deal. I thought it was a 2-year deal that they signed him for. Or was did he lose a year because of the injury?
I think the year was last year, because he didn't pitch last year.
So yeah, I think that might
be. I'm looking it up right now as we're talking.
But either way, it's a guy that will, if you remember the time back when he was a Yankee, he would throw 5 innings, keep you in a ball game, and that was it. Like, his pitch count will go up, and he wouldn't get deep into the game, but he would keep you in the game practically every time. You know, he would get a lot of ground balls. And that's just not somebody I want on the Red Sox, because that actually does help them on their fourth and fifth day.
Yeah, so he's going to be a free agent after this year.
The second year was this year. The first year was when he was injured.
Yeah, they were paying him to rehab, essentially. But I guess it's a good move for the Red Sox and Dombrowski, because they didn't give up much. It adds insurance to their rotation. They're still going after bullpen help. But again, Nathan Eovaldi is not going to win the Red Sox the division. If the Red Sox win the division, it's going to be solely because the Yankees have struggled against teams they should not be struggling against.
But the thing is they're playing the same game that the Yankees are going to have to play at some point. Is they're going to need guys in the back of their rotation to eat innings, right? Like, that's going to have to happen.
They're concerned with Pomerantz and Rodriguez's health, which is why they went out and added Eovaldi. Whereas the Yankees, what we saw them do this week is Cashman's evaluating the starting pitching market. He's not liking what he's seeing. The Jays are apparently asking for Clint Frazier or Justice Sheffield for Ja Happ, and he's saying, pound sand, I'll go out and get Zach Britton.
Yeah, I mean, Cashman's gonna pivot and do what he needs to do to make a good deal for the Yankees. So I'm sticking with the trusting Cash mantra. This is what I do. I trust in the man, and I think, you know, we'll talk about the Britton move, but I think it was a good deal given what they have, given seeing what they got back for the package that they put out. I think it was an extremely good value, and I think he did really well again, especially for getting a guy who's getting better and better and getting healthier and healthier.
Yeah, well, let's just talk about the Britton now, because I have a very strong feeling that we're going to go down a deep rabbit hole on Gary Sanchez. So I want to get some stuff out of the way before we do that. Britton, Dylan Tate, Josh Rogers, and Cody Carroll are going to Baltimore. Tate was the prospect the Yankees got back from the Rangers when they traded Carlos Beltran. And then Rogers and Carroll were both having pretty solid seasons for the Rail Riders. I think it's an interesting move, because a lot of scouts are saying, you know, Baltimore did pretty good for a reliever who was coming off an injury and who's going to be a free agent. But at the same time, you're looking at the Yankees' current minor league system and saying, All three of those guys were going to have to be added to the 40-man roster unless they if they wanted to keep them this winter. And those prospects are not the top guys. They're not the guys that are probably going to be helping the Yankees in the next couple of years. So they were expendable in the Yankees organization.
So it was definitely interesting to hear some of Connor Foley's comment actually on the one guy. He thinks they'll both be contributors, spoiler alert, but to the horrible Baltimore rotation and bullpen. But Carroll was one of the guys that I really didn't know a ton about, but he was really talking highly of him baseball wise, talking that he's hitting 100 and was just doing well and thinks that he can be become an even better player. So that's great. You know, like you said, they had to be added to the 40. Wasn't going to happen. There's a number of these guys where our 40-man situation is going to be, it's an issue. I'm not going to say it's an issue. It's something that they have to think about. Brian Cashman has to think about when doing these deals, because he's not going to be able to sign all these guys and he's going to lose them for nothing. Peanuts. Unless you actually package them into a deal like this. So the deal is the fact that Carlos Beltran is the gift that keeps on giving is terrific, because we basically flip Carlos Beltran, a journeyman pitcher, and maybe a reliever at some point, into Zach Britton, who 2 years ago was the best closer in baseball. So, it's 2 years ago. I get that. Like, he's coming back from an injury, but he's looked a lot closer to that guy than he has the guy that started the season.
Definitely. I encourage you guys to go check out. We have a couple articles on Britton that were posted today. One of them by Frank Marco is really good analysis of, like you said, why Britton's trending in the right direction. His whiff percentage and ground ball rate is trending in the right direction. So that's good news for the Yankees. And what he does is he provides more depth in an already dominant bullpen. And I have to imagine Chasen Shreve is the odd man out when Britton joins the team on Thursday, right?
I mean, it makes sense. I don't really know why you're the only thing I can think of, and I threw this this little nugget out in our Bronx Pinstripes behind the scenes chat, was, when we're looking at the pitchers, when we're looking at like the starting pitchers on the market, and we're looking to see what Brian Cashman might be able to acquire, and then you look to see what you have currently. Well, are any of these guys, is J.A. Happ, is Cole Hamels currently, where they stand right now, are they better than a guy like Adam Warren if you flip him around and make him a starter? I'm not so sure about that. I'm not so sure that they're better. On their best day, they're probably better. But if you give them, 7 to 10 starts, I would argue that they're pretty damn close. So I think that Warren is a guy that could easily be turned around and stretched out and thrown into the rotation if need be, because you're going to need, something's going to have to give in that bullpen. So, I mean,
Are you talking about Warren being a starting pitcher?
Yes.
Pitcher or being an opener?
No.
You're not talking about bullpenning. You're not talking about bullpenning.
No, I'm not talking about this bullpen. I'm not in the circus. The circus, we left Tampa, okay? No more talking about this nonsense.
They have enough guys where they could do it, and I could really see a situation where they do it as the fourth game in the playoffs if they don't want to.
In the playoffs, in a short situation and something like that, it's a different story than the regular season at this point in August, or almost in August. I'm talking about turning him around and making him a starting pitcher, because I don't think it would take that much for him. He's already kind of stretched out. He can go multiple innings currently. It wouldn't take a lot for him to go out there and transition into it.
You don't think they would try that with AJ Cole first?
Well, I think that Warren's proved that he's done it before. He's done it in pinstripes before. You know, he's been that guy who's been a swing man. He's been the number 4 or 5 guy in this rotation before. It's a situation and a role that he's done before. And we've seen that Adam Warren's really good at things he's done before, but if he goes to a different city and tries to do those things, terrible things happen. Yeah. But when he comes back, all of a sudden he's good again. So, I wouldn't be surprised in that, because he's got experience in it. AJ Cole is definitely someone you could look at too. He started the season with the Nationals as a starting pitcher.
And he was a starting pitcher for the Nationals last year.
Well, so there you go. I mean, I think either one of those guys or both of those guys could be targets for that particular role. But there are options, not just minor league guys, not just the Sheffields and the Chance Adams of the world. We got guys on the major league roster right now. Some would say Chad Green. I think that's a bad idea. But that could come in here and I think admirably fill in as that fifth starter.
I think what we've seen with Chad Green is his fastball is still elite, but his slider this season has not been as good. And if you're saying moving him to a starting pitcher role with just a fastball, I think that's asking a lot.
No, I said no. I said no, that's not a good idea.
I was reiterating as to why you why I thought you were saying no.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's way too much to risk.
Some context to the thing.
Entirely too much to risk for a guy like him. I mean, one, he's, you know, we haven't seen great success out of him. He was Luis Sessa and all these other guys before he was Chad Green.
He came over with Luis Sessa for Justin Wilson from the Tigers.
Yes. So I would not be a proponent of putting him back into a rotation where you need more than two pitches to become an effective starter.
Maybe he tries it in the offseason like we thought maybe he was going to try it in last offseason. But that's not a midseason move you make with Green.
No, hell no. That's not even to me in consideration. But Warren and Cole, I think 1,000% are absolutely in that ballpark or in that pocket where you could do that. And I would feel comfortable. I legitimately would feel probably more comfortable, honestly, than giving up like a big name to go get J.A. Happ or Cole Hamels or whomever this fifth starter that we're trying to get he's going to be an innings hitter. I would feel just as comfortable with a guy like Adam Warren who turns himself around, stretches out, and becomes our fifth starter, and that becomes his role. I would probably be more confident and comfortable with Warren in that role.
What about honestly. If you're not talking about giving up a big name for Happ?
It's close. It's that close. I do. I think
Happ's
it's that close.
Happ's been bad recently, but not. I mean, he hasn't been horrendous. Overall, his season has been pretty strong. There's some rumors heating up now that the Yankees are talking to the Jays about Happ even more. Like I said, the Blue Jays are asking for either Sheffield or Clint Frazier, which is never going to happen. But if you kind of just break up Happ's season in the first 13 starts, he had a 3.71 ERA and a 3.48 FIP. And in the last seven starts, he has struggled a bit more, 5.20 ERA, 4.62 FIP. Perhaps if you kind of break that down by game log, you can see some games where he had blow up games, like the one against the Yankees. And I know the earned runs, he didn't give up earned runs against the Red Sox, but he still got hit hard. He still gave up the grand slam heard around the world to Mookie Betts. So, you know, Happ has been up and down. That's what he is. He could go out there and give you seven strong innings. He could go out there and get his brains bashed in four innings. It's just that is the risk you're running with Ja Happ.
That's the thing, though. That's what I don't want. I don't want a guy that's going to give me, you know, a good start one day, and then who the hell knows what he's going to give us the next day, and he's going to be so bipolar in that sense. It's going to be the Jekyll and Hyde that we've seen, you know, so many times now with Pineda and Sonny Gray, and I mean, it doesn't end. I would prefer a guy that's a little bit more constant and you know that's going to go out there, is going to grind, is going to compete. He might only give you five, six innings max, but you know you're going to get a good start out of him that will keep you in the game. And to me, that was Eovaldi. I think Eovaldi would be that guy. But again, you're going to have to give up something, apparently not very much. But I think Adam Warren can absolutely be that guy. I don't know enough about AJ Cole as a starter to say that I would be comfortable with him, honestly. I've seen what he's done
at this point.
He's looked good, but who knows?
Right. I think with the looking at how the Yankees have used him sporadically in short relief appearances, they're not comfortable with using him as a starter either.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they know enough either. I mean, Adam Warren is a known commodity. He's been around the organization for a long time. They know what they're going to get out of him. I trust him. I have more trust in him than I do any of these other guys. And maybe that's delusional. Maybe that's a mirage. I don't know.
Last time Warren has started a game, he was with the Cubs. So he has not started a game since he came back to the Yankees.
Right. But he, the year I'm looking it up right
2015,
now. 2015. 17 games started.
17 starts. Yep.
And you know, he pitched, he finished the season, you know, he I remember him going and doing well as a starter and then going to Chicago when he was flipped around, played Chicago in 2016 and was abysmal. It was just a terrible, like he was lost. Like he was, I'm wearing the wrong color pinstripes. What's happening? I don't understand what's going on right now.
Hey, but he got didn't he get a World Series ring out of it?
I think he did get a ring. Yeah, he did get a ring.
Yeah, that's got to be the worst kind of World Series ring to win, is the one that you your team you started with wins, and then you're not even on that squad. Or I guess the Tyler Clippard one's pretty bad, too. You just bounce around a couple teams because you're so bad. You wind up being on the Astros to finish the season but don't make the playoff roster.
Yeah, it's I don't know what you do with the ring at that point. I mean, you accept it. You're like, yeah, I'm really happy. I got this ring. Thank you very much.
You pawn it.
You pawn it. You put it on eBay. You donate it.
Depends how much cash. It depends if you're strapped for cash or not.
Yeah, like Latrell Sprewell type
right.
Thing. Yeah. Not that he ever won a title.
I just also want to mention a bonus to the Zach Britton coming to the Yankees is that Houston and Boston does not get him.
Do you think that actually played a significant role into the signing and potentially added more prospects to what they what Cashman was doing?
Well, I think in a sense, yeah, because I think Houston and Boston were both in on him. So not necessarily that Brian Cashman's main motive was to keep him from those other teams, but he was competing with those teams. And so in a sense, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think so too. I think it's if you have to look at that part of it, because if you're let's say you're on the fence and you don't want to you know, throw in a third player, whatever it is, you know, I'm just making stuff up at this point. But if there's some arbitrary, you know, piece that you have to add in order to beat those guys, you do it, because not only are you getting the player at that point, but you're definitely keeping him away from a competitor who's already, both of them are very strong, and it's a need. That's the other thing. It's a very big need for both of those guys. So I think it's a not only an addition, but it's an addition by subtraction as well from the other teams.
Right, right, definitely. All right, let's get into Hustlegate. Gary Sanchez, everybody at this point knows what's been going on with Sanchez. He had the two just absolute dog of plays on Monday. In the first inning, he got crossed up. Ball bounces away up the third baseline. He loafs it. He takes a leisurely stroll like he's walking in the park on a Sunday to go grab that ball. Meanwhile, the runner from second base, Bowers, is sprinting around the corner, around third base, and he scores on that play. You could tell Severino was immediately pissed off, because that should not have been a run. He should have just been stranded at third base, but that was a run. And then in the ninth inning, with the bases loaded, two outs, the Yankees down to their final out, down one run, he hits a ball up the middle and just assumes, jogging up the first baseline, assumes Hicks is going to be thrown out at second base. He's not. Tries to kick it into gear at the last minute. It's too late. He's still out by five steps. It was just...
wasn't five steps.
Ten steps, whatever it was.
No. It was way less than that, which is, to me, significant. It was like two steps, a step and a half.
Fine. He should have been safe by 2.5 steps, not out by 2.5 steps.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like it was a joke. It's significant how close the play was, even with him not running.
5.39 seconds to get down the first baseline.
Yeah, I could do that backwards. But look, there are so many layers to this thing.
A million layers.
Because, you know, everybody's talking about, you know, the injury. That's the one thing. Look, first of all, I don't think there are very many people on Gary Sanchez's side. I will say that. I think
there's a contingent out there that completely not very many forgives him because he was, quote, injured.
Okay, not very many of them. There really aren't very many of them, because people who have sense and they're thinking about this logically, and they're talking about a guy who hits a ball up the middle and is watching the play the entire time and is jogging and loafing and doing what he would normally do, no matter if he was 100% healthy or if he had one leg, he would be jogging and loafing it, watching the play, because that's just what he's been doing. And then all of a sudden he realizes, wait, hold on a second. There was a play. He's safe at second. Safe at second. Aaron Hicks is busting his ass to get to second base. I got to run. I got to start running. And what did he do? He started running. Miraculously, he started sprinting.
The groin was healthy on those last two.
It was
steps.
Healthy on the last two. He turned the turbo jet on. Was like, oh, I got to run now. I got to run fast. So it was there. The ability to run fast for Gary Sanchez was there. And he turned it on when he realized he was going to look like an idiot, but it wasn't there for the first four, you know, for the first quarter of the base path. Like, to me, that makes no sense. The guy has had the ability to do whatever he wanted to do. He could have run it out and he would have felt it afterwards. That's what happens. He played from the first inning through, what was that, the ninth inning, and played all the way through the entire game, injured, allegedly. And was able to get there.
So people are probably right now saying, do you not believe that Gary Sanchez was really injured? So I'm sure the MRI showed something. I'm sure he's not, quote, 100%. Most guys at this point in the season in late July are not 100%. The fact is, Gary Sanchez was healthy enough to come off the DL and healthy enough to catch a full game. He was healthy enough to run harder than he ran. And he even admitted that after the game. He said, I should have run harder. And then the next day, when the injury stuff came out, he doubled down. And I give him credit for this. Injury is not an excuse. I should have run harder.
I'm a lazy ass. I should have run harder. It doesn't actually hurt that badly.
So whether or not he is injured, which he's on the DL, he's going to be out a month, which I am shocked about. That doesn't matter. The fact is, he dogged it on two separate plays that cost the Yankees Monday's game.
Yes. That is 100% the bottom line. Injury or no injury, he continued to play. He was physically able to go out there and play. And it was an effort problem. It was a lack of effort. And when I see that, I want to vomit. It makes me more angry than anything on the baseball field. I don't care if you are freaking Chris Carter and you play the bases, the sport, eyes closed. If you're out there trying your hardest with your eyes closed with one hand,
we did have some meltdowns last year for Carter.
That's fine. But you know what? At least the man was trying. I give him credit for even making to the major leagues. That is a feat in and of itself.
It's a miraculous story.
I don't know how he did it.
Disney's making a movie about it.
Stephen Drew. You know,
Eyes Wide Shut too.
Eyes Wide Shut too. I never questioned an effort. I just thought he was a bad baseball player, and it was annoying and frustrating to see him go out there. It was more on the fact that they wouldn't give the opportunity to Ref Snyder. That's why I became a Ref Snyder fan, because it was really just like, get this other guy out of here.
Really an anti-Stephen Drew fan.
Yeah, that's how it really came about. But the bottom line is, if you don't give an effort in a game with you know, thousands and thousands and millions of people watching that are passionate fans that pay money to watch you do this, and you make a ridiculous amount of money to go out there and play a game that every one of us would love to do, and you're not trying, bro, you lose me on that. You absolutely lose me. And I guarantee, not only did Gary Sanchez hurt the team that day, but he lost a lot of fans. He did. He lost a lot of fans, because when that lack of effort is shown, it shows an arrogance. It shows an ability to not connect with reality. It shows so many things as a person, as the way that you play the game. And to me, those are some of the more fundamental and big reasons why I root for guys, is because of how they play the game. There's so many guys you could say that weren't the greatest players, but their effort was always there. They always would hustle their ass off. That's why I respect what Tebow's doing. The guy's busting his ass, doing what he tries to do. He's not the greatest player, and yeah, he's using some of his fame to get him to a point, but he's not dogging it. He's trying his ass off. He's legitimately trying to be a baseball player. I can't fault that.
So with Gary Sanchez, I think what he's lost with me is I'm no longer going to immediately come to his defense, because I think, for as much as we've criticized Gary Sanchez's blocking ability, we've said he needs to get better on that. Largely, don't you think we've come to Gary Sanchez's defense? I mean, we were certainly in his defense when there were morons out there saying that Austin Romine should have been the starting catcher back in April because Gary Sanchez was on a slump. So I think that for me has been lost, because now he's gotten to a point where he cannot be pulling this shit anymore. I don't expect him to run sprint every single time, because that's not realistic. I don't think it's not realistic for him. It's not realistic for a lot of players. You're down 6-0 in the fifth inning. You hit a ground ball to shortstop. He's not going to sprint down the first baseline. I get that. Yes. But he needs to sprint down the first baseline, groin injury or no groin injury, in the ninth inning of a one-run ball game. That's the difference between a game. So that's really where he lost me. And the whole thing about I don't even know. I lost my train of
thought. If you're gonna be a gamer, I mean, if you're gonna be if you're gonna get credit to be a gamer, and like that's part of this as well, and people are saying that, okay, but he toughed it out. He went in the first inning and he was injured,
right,
and he played through. People want to say that's fine, but you know what? If you're gonna be that guy, if you're gonna wear that hat, you better run your ass off in the ninth inning too, because you're in the game. You're putting your team in a liability for playing through it, and that's fine. Like I have no problem with when guys do that. Honestly, like I like that. But you can't not try because of that and then use it as an excuse later. If you're not going to try because of the injury, take yourself out of the game. You don't belong in the game.
Yep.
But if you can't be both guys. You can't be the tough guy who goes out there and does it and then dogs it because you're injured. Like, no, you need to choose a side here. You can't do that. It doesn't work.
And also, I'm sure there's some people in the Yankees clubhouse who probably lost some patience with Sanchez at that moment.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, I think it was extremely apparent in the first inning that Severino lost his patience. You know, whether it was just a short term thing in the immediate situation when he saw him loafing after a ball that was crossed up, that very well could have been Gary Sanchez's fault for a cross up. By the way, do we know whose fault that was? There are so many layers to this, because the other thing about, you're talking about like the fact that we defended him. Like, we defended him when there was something relatively that you could defend on, right? Like, Okay, so we're talking about him not being the greatest blocker or not being let's just focus on the blocking. Like, yeah, okay, not the greatest blocker, but he's got all these other assets. He helps the team in so many different ways. He seemed to have called a good game. He can frame the ball well. He's the best offensive catcher by far in the league. There's no doubt about it. The Yankees are better with Gary Sanchez on the field, 100%. I will never argue anybody about that with who's currently on the roster. I believe that. But when you have a guy, I don't care what your ability is, and that's not trying, all of that is gone. It's gone. It's an immediate deal breaker. It's an immediate deal breaker because then, one, you can't be trusted. Your teammates can't trust you. Your pitcher can't trust you, especially when you're a part of an important battery like that. When you lose the pitcher, you get frustrated. Like, how do we know that how much of Severino's bad start wasn't leftover frustration because his catcher was throwing the wrong signs up?
Well, I'm not.
I'm just saying, like, we don't know that, but that
he was clearly frustrated in the first inning. They got into a heated argument in the dugout. I'm not going to blame Luis Severino's struggles on Monday on Gary Sanchez.
I'm not blaming the whole thing, but it's a part. It's a piece of the puzzle.
I posed this question on Twitter and I got a mixed response. Say in the ninth inning, Gary Sanchez strikes out. Yankees lose. Gary just walks back to the dugout because he struck out. Does he go on the DL the next day? Or is the talk just about that first inning play and if Boone is going to bench him?
It's a really hard question because you know, I don't know. I don't have the answer to that question.
I'll say yes.
I don't think so. If the situation is similar and the fact that, because I don't think that the injury was enough to really like hinder many of the things that he was doing. I think this is the Yankees playing it safe with their number one catcher.
Exactly. We're playing it safe with public perception, I think.
No, I think public, he's screwed in public perception already.
But no, the injury, saying, look, he's injured, now he's on the DL, takes away a lot of people are buying it. A lot of people aren't criticizing him as harshly because he is on the DL now.
I don't think that matters at all. I don't think the Yankees give a shit what
it doesn't matter to me, but it matters to people.
I don't think it matters that much to people that once this is done and you saw what happened and you saw that he's still running, even though he's claiming he's injured and he played an entire game. They're speaking to like the 1% of the population then, because that's not.
I think it was a convenient timing for them to move on. They did not have to address this directly head on. If Gary Sanchez was fully healthy, Aaron Boone would have had to answer the questions the next day. Are you benching him? Yes or no? Are you reprimanding your catcher for dogging it? And they didn't have to answer those questions the next day because they just put him on the DL. So I think I agree. Gary Sanchez is not 100%, but I think he was healthy enough and would still be on the active roster if those plays did not happen.
Well, you're saying the first inning didn't happen either?
Definitely, if both didn't happen.
That's where he apparently injured himself.
Yeah, bullshit.
I'm just saying, dude, that's what he says.
So they would have said if it happened in the third inning, that's what they would have said. If it just happened in the ninth inning, that's what they would have said.
The bottom line is
they were going to say something. I think that the ninth inning play really took it over the top. That is what was the headliner the night of and the next day. Yankees catcher dogs it down line, loses ball game. That was the headline.
All right. To me, it's an easy spin either way, honestly. If he's injured and the play happens, boom, injury, DL. If he strikes out but he's still injured, then you have to be careful with him at that point, DL, because you're being careful with a guy and you're still saving him from that first play. So I still think that they put him on the DL, whether I think them talking about a month. Like, to me, that's the alarming part, the fact that they are talking about like September, end of August, September. Like, that's alarming.
That's exactly how long it was the first time, 4 weeks.
Right. So it's the same injury, exact same injury. It's
exact
like
same injury.
Not just a re-aggravation.
I don't think they actually took another MRI. I think they just reprinted the first one.
They copy it, just threw it on copy.
Someone got the wrong file.
So go get a copy of this. They come back with a bunch of ass photocopies. I think he would have been on the DL no matter what, because I still think the Yankees would have played it safe. You know, I think
I love the controversy, though. You know, I love the conspiracy.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. It totally makes a lot of sense. I just don't think they're as much concerned about this PR at this point. I think they're more concerned about the product on the field, the Yankees themselves. I think Gary Sanchez already did the damage. I think the damage was done. Because the people that have half a brain don't believe the fact that he was loafing was because of the injury. And even admitted that it wasn't the reason.
Right. And I think that when he comes back, he has no... He's on strike two already.
That's the problem. The problem is he's not a first-time offender. Like, Gary Sanchez has kind of had that label. I mean, part of the blocking, honestly...
He got benched in Trenton because of this.
Part of the... Yeah. And he's, you know, had countless disagreements with Joe Girardi about these very same things.
Ooh, I want to bring that up too.
And I'll tell you, a lot of the blocking, when we were talking about the blocking, I know I said it, it's a lack of effort. I think it was a lack of focus, a lack of effort, a lack of preparation. I think a lot of that went into it. A lack of conditioning. I mean, you could, the list goes on and on. And all of those things add up to a guy that's not taking his profession 100% seriously. And that pisses me off. So yeah, I know he's a great hitter, but I also think he's a very a talented hitter. He sees the ball, he can smash the ball. Blocking is not a sexy thing to do. It's not fun to do. It's not something to go and when you have to work on the guy, you have to grind to do that. You have to spend a lot of hours and hot days in the Dominican Republic to fix that, because it's not happening in the season. It's happening, you know, during the off season. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of grind work. Does he have that in him? Maybe. Has he shown it? Absolutely not.
He hasn't shown it, and that's concerning because, you know, I was thinking, so the first inning play happens. He knows he screwed up. It was obvious that he screwed up. Just think back. When you mess up, like back in college, you did not study for a test. You bomb it. You're going to damn well study for that next test, right? Maybe you're not going to study for the two after that one, but at least the next one you're going to make an effort.
You're not asking the right person. Honestly, I would go drink and then just forget about my problems.
Well, okay, you are exactly the type of Gary Sanchez, because Gary Sanchez messed up. He knew he messed up in the first inning, and he should have been on his best effort behavior for the rest of the game. But, and 8 innings later, he wasn't.
You know,
so it's not ingrained in him to
right,
try
that's
hard.
That's the problem, right? The fact that it's inert, like inside of him, that it's part of his makeup. That's the problem I have, and that's the biggest concerning thing. Because at the end of the game, he wasn't thinking about that. Oh, I screwed up early. I need to try harder now. He wasn't thinking that I need to grind it out every single time. I need to make up for what I did. He was disappointed that he hit the ball at the guy, and that was it. It ended there. The disappointment took over his body. He stopped running, and he sulked. And he started moping and was putting his head down like freaking Eeyore, and was just, you know, and then he realized, I'm about to get embarrassed. I'm about to get embarrassed. The play is still happening. The guy in front of me busted his ass to get to second base to continue the play. And now I'm loafing it and I'm going to look stupid. So I better start running all of a sudden. That's the problem, because that was ingrained in him. You're right. That was a problem because he was watching the play and nothing mattered after the disappointment of him hitting the ball to the fielder. Nothing mattered after that to him.
Honestly, that's perhaps the biggest issue with all of this.
Yes.
Is that I'm not sure that he's ever going to change. And it's really frustrating with players like Sanchez, because the ability is off the charts.
Right.
If a we've already said this, but if a player sucks and he doesn't try, you move on from him. People are saying you got to trade Gary Sanchez now, and I don't think that's the answer, because I don't think you're going to get proper value for Gary Sanchez. One, and two, the Yankees are with Gary Sanchez. That's when the Yankees are at their best, when Gary Sanchez is playing well, being a good catcher, leading the pitching staff, and hitting home runs. That's when the Yankees team is at their best. He's not doing that this year. It's going to be a completely lost season now for Gary Sanchez. He missed a month already. He's going to miss another month. He's got this big debacle in the middle of the season. 2018 is completely lost for Sanchez.
Look, all of these things being said, everything that we've talked about, you know, the knocks on him, everything that he's done, this does not put me in the camp of I give up on Gary Sanchez. That's not me. That's not how I feel about certain players. I feel that anybody and everybody can make a concerted effort to change the way that they do things and become better. I truly believe that, not just baseball, everywhere. This is a completely drastic example, but it's a good example, I think. Look at what Josh Hamilton did. When Josh Hamilton was drafted by the Tampa Bay Devil Rays at the time, actually, he was the number one pick, right? The number one pick.
Number one overall.
Was in a bad place, super young, super immature, into drugs, went to jail, was into just a bunch of bad things in a very bad place. he got help. He fixed it. He got whatever he needed to do, and he went back to the baseball field, and he fixed it, and he became a disciplined baseball player and became an all-freaking-world talent. I'm sorry, the all-world talent that he always had, that he always possessed, came out. And that is, you know, like a beautiful example of a guy. Again, it's drastic. It's not remotely close to what I'm talking about here, but it's an example of somebody just making a change in their life and having that God-given ability that Gary Sanchez absolutely has, and making a small change in the way you do things. Because I don't think it's a huge change that he needs to do, but I do think it's a mindset thing. It's a mindset thing that he needs to get better at. And you know, maybe it's just work ethic at that point where he needs to work a certain... You hear about the work ethic and everybody says it's off the charts. I have a hard time believing it.
So you're saying Gary Sanchez has a drug problem?
But you know, it's crazy. It's crazy because Josh Hamilton was a guy that everybody gave up on. The kid Beckham from also the Devil Rays. Why are the Devil Rays drafting all these cons at the time they're drafted, and they realize their talent later? But Tim Beckham was another guy who went to jail, right? Was a high draft pick, came back, had the talent was there, fixed a couple things, tweaked a couple things inside, and boom, guess what? Talent's still there, and then you get your mind right, boom, you start seeing good things.
Have we exhausted the Gary Sanchez topic? Do you want to move on to criticizing a decision on Aaron Boone?
Oh man, I don't know. I could talk about this Gary Sanchez thing for a long time.
It's not going to be the last time we talk about it.
It was one of the... Oh yeah, we failed to mention the all time backhand that the New York Yankees gave out next morning,
really, which was really
which
ironic.
Was 1,000% a scheduled tweet that was a scheduled award on a given day. It was already preset. Like it was probably in Hootsuite's ready to send out like before the game. The heart and hustle award going to the backup catcher, Austin Romine.
It was maybe my favorite ever tweet by the New York Yankees.
You cannot get more poetic than that. You really can't. It was unbelievable.
A+.
They forgot that was scheduled probably, and they saw it go up and they're like, shit.
Yeah. And they couldn't delete it because that would have just been worse.
So this kind of goes against your argument about trying to save the PR because they just threw it right back in his face.
I guess so. It's such a mess. And but him going on the DL actually does save some of the PR nightmare, because otherwise Gary Sanchez would just be riding the bench for the next probably 3 games, if I had to guess.
I wouldn't even guess it was that long. I wouldn't think it was that long. Whatever, when's Sonny Gray's next start?
Tomorrow, Thursday.
So it would be after he would get the start after the Sonny Gray start probably.
Okay, that would have been 3 games.
Okay, 3 games.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Aaron Boone's decision to bunt in the ninth inning before the Gary Sanchez mess happened. So the Yankees got the first two runners on. Didi Gregorius is up. Number three hitter, Didi Gregorius is up with no outs. Didi bunts. Did we ever get a confirmation if that was Boone's call or if it was Didi's call to bunt?
I don't have 1,000% confirmation. I got to believe it came from the dugout, though. I 100% would say it came from the
dugout. And even so, because Didi missed the first bunt. So yeah. if it was Didi's own decision, Boone could have told him to stop doing it regardless. Okay. I was just a little second guessing of my own second guess there. But that was a bad decision, I think, because not only does it take the bat out of Didi's hands, but it takes the bat out of Stanton's hands, because of course they were going to intentionally walk him.
Yeah, I have no problem with the call. Like, Didi's not your typical three hitter in the sense that he can't handle the bat and lay down a bunt. He's a shortstop. He should be able to do it. After I saw the first bunt attempt, maybe I would have called it off because he should never even attempt it at that ball. The ball was not even close to the strike zone. It was a terrible pitch. He should have never attempted the bunt on that ball. I don't have a problem with the play itself. So this is one of those situations where everybody's going to crush him if he doesn't get the runner over, and or crush him in so many different scenarios. If Didi rolls a ball over to the right side, he advances the runners. They walk Stanton. If Didi goes there and grounds into a double play, there's two outs, they walk Stanton. There are so many other situations where they walk Stanton or Didi doesn't get the job done that come into play for this exact situation. So what did he do? He guaranteed himself a one-out situation with the bases loaded. That's what he did. He guaranteed himself with a one-out situation with the bases loaded with Aaron Hicks on the right side. to me, that's a pretty good gamble. And you're down by one. You got to tie that game. You have to tie the game first and foremost. You can't worry about the go-ahead run. You got to tie the game. 100%, that's the initiative. So by doing that, by loading the bases with one out, and you have your guy, a switch hitter from the right-handed side, who's a stronger hitter from the right-hand side, up, and all you need is a fly ball or a hard ground ball somewhere, infield probably would have been in, tie game. I got no problems with it.
I understand it if we're talking about Romine bunting or Neil Walker bunting or Higgy bunting at the bottom of the order to get the top of the order back up there. I get it. But I would rather have first and second no outs, having Didi swing away and having Stanton swing away. I think that gives me a better chance to
So look at the percentages, though. Like, Didi hits a fly ball to the right side. Okay, let's say he because it's going to go to the right side. We agree with that? I mean, the ball's going to the right side. Let's all be honest.
If it's a fly ball, yeah.
I mean,
he doesn't hit fly balls.
If it's a ground ball on the left side, it's a double play ball. So if he hits a fly ball to the right side, okay, Gardner, who was on second, if I remember correctly, right, he tags up. Stanton still gets walked. Still gets walked, 100%.
If first base is open.
No, it doesn't have to be open. You don't think Kevin Cash is walking with a runner on third to line up the force. I still think he's going to walk him. The guy's 9 for 9. All he needs is a fly ball. You're not going to take your chances with Aaron Hicks at that point as Kevin Cash. I am. It's a similar situation to what Boone had to do in Toronto. The smoke is not, Aaron Hicks is not Justin Smoke.
So what was it? There was a one out situation with the bases loaded, correct? So, it's about the same expected runs probability, 1.5.
Right. Throw your metrics out the window. Small percentages.
1.5 runs is the average runs you score in both situations. First and second, no outs, and bases loaded, one out. You're expected to get 1.5 runs in both situations, according to the run expectancy table.
All right, whatever. My eyes say that you have a guaranteed bases loaded situation with one out, guaranteed bases loaded situation with one out with a guy on his strong side to get a fly ball. I'm taking that opportunity. I'm sorry. I'm taking that opportunity. That to me is a higher percentage play.
We haven't even got to the fact that Luis Severino gave up 11 hits and 7 runs to a lineup that had G-Man, He-Man, Choi batting cleanup.
Hey, don't talk shit about He-Man, man. He was a flash of goodness at first base last year.
Severino has had 3 bad starts in a row, and if you look at his season, he allowed 6 home runs in his first 18 starts, and he's allowed 6 home runs in his last 3 starts. He's getting hit harder. His velocity was fine in this start. He was still throwing in the upper 90s, but again, his pitch, his location was off. His off-speed stuff was up in the zone, and the 2 home runs to this Rays team. I kind of gave him the start in Toronto where he just gutted through 5 innings. Fine. That's what Severino does when he's not on his game. Then he went to Cleveland and we're thinking, okay, maybe he's just a little gassed right before the All-Star break. But this time he's coming. He's got extra rest coming out of the All-Star break against Tampa. This one, I kind of got a little worried about Severino.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not there yet, but you definitely want to see a correction at this point. You want to see him come out and be, the Severino we've seen in the first half, the aggressive, dominant guy with all that confidence that's locating his pitches for sure. I think we need to see that to feel good about it. But it has to be concerning to a certain extent because that's 3 in a row. I mean, that's a lot. And I understand that the All-Star break was a big gap in between there, so kind of throws things off a little bit as well. He did throw an inning there. So there was, his routine was totally thrown off as well. But yeah, you gotta be, the reason you have to be so concerned is because he's the only, he's the only constant. Yeah. He's the only constant. Before Tanaka did what he did, he was granted he's been pretty good since he's come back, but Severino has been the guy that we've been able to depend on. So yes, it's concerning in that regard that he's our savior at this point. He's the guy that we rely on. And if we don't have that, then
if you don't have Severino pitching like the ace he was pitching in his first, whatever it was,
this team's in way bigger trouble.
This team is screwed if they don't have that from Severino.
Yeah. It's not a good situation. I want to see a better start from him. I want to see more confidence. I want to see him be him. Nothing is telling me that he's off. Like maybe, you know, maybe there's just a small tweak that he and Rothschild or he and whoever the catching team need to go over, because it could be, you know, an adjustment the opponents have been making because there's more of a book on him and they're
sure
seeing
they are
something.
Making adjustments. Yeah, that's what happens.
That could be it. I mean, they could be you know, laying off certain pitches and just waiting for that slider or well, whatever.
The biggest
whatever
thing is the fact that his slider was spinning in the middle of the plate pretty frequently on Monday. So if he was throwing sliders in his same sharp slider and just the hitters weren't swinging at it and then they were pounding his fastball, perhaps that would be a little bit more concerning than the fact that he threw a bad pitch and got beat. You throw a bad pitch, you should get beat.
Right. Yeah. So again, just we needed to see something good out of him, I think. Not that we need to see it at this point, but it would be nice to see it,
so that we can all
just kind of breathe a little easier.
Yeah, we just need something to calm us down.
Tanaka helped out.
I thought it was going to be the bats that came out and had a fire lit under them on Tuesday. It wasn't. It was Tanaka who comes out, complete game shutout, three hitter. His best start since the complete game shutout he threw at Fenway Park. Tanaka, we know what he does on extra rest. He's a beast on extra rest.
Yeah, he loves that. I mean, we have the scenarios down pat that he loves. It's got to be a night game. It's got to be on long rest against another Asian starter. Boom, done. That day, throw all of your money, your entire life savings on Masahiro Tanaka.
Well, if it's a major day
in Yankee Stadium at all, like any kind of like a significant day, especially if Derek Jeter is involved, stay far away from that bet. Far away from that bet because he will melt down.
Well, people are thinking, okay, here we go. Tanaka, second half Tanaka, October, postseason October Tanaka. We got him back. Tanaka-san.
Yeah. I mean, maybe this is what we got after June 30 last year. We had a much different pitcher.
He threw 105 pitches, 65% of which were sliders and splitters. He threw a total of 16 fastballs. So his splitter and slider were extremely sharp. But we still saw the focus, the leaning heavily on off-speed stuff.
Right, but he did throw the fastball enough, obviously. And I love the fact that he was efficient, because he was an efficient outing as well.
Complete game, 105.
And we don't see complete games very often anymore. So
no,
the fact that Boone kept him going out there, you know, when he was close to 100 pitches as well, you know, I like that. And I like the fact that I think that gives a lot of... it gives a lot of confidence and shows Tanaka that, you know, he's got a lot of belief in him and that he's able to finish these games if he can get to that point. So I like it.
And that gave the Yankees some momentum. They had a quick turnaround on Wednesday. Sessa actually comes out and pitches well. The Yankees catch a break. They're not facing Eovaldi. The Rays are bullpenning again.
Oh, now
Yankees,
that's a break? Now that's a break?
Well, the Yankees just can't friggin' hit this Tampa bullpen. It is insane.
Yeah. No, it makes no sense to me. It's mind boggling. It's not like they're not seeing these guys. They're seeing these guys just over and over again.
Yeah. One inning at a time.
So the fact that we haven't seen these guys and it's one inning at a time, like, you can't use that excuse anymore. These dudes are just, they're like, you know, they get salt and peppered on you. Like, at some point they're going to be there and you've seen him, like, oh, you again, one of your 19 pitchers. It's crazy that they cannot go out there and put some, everybody besides Miguel Andujar, who can apparently rake the
doubles
the
machine.
Yeah, he can rake the Tampa bullpenning machine. It's frustrating. But Sessa, like, credit to Sessa, one bad pitch really was that home run to Kiermaier. But other than that, he went, well, 5 1/3, was super efficient. I think he had 55 pitches at that point.
It's two good starts in a row for Sessa because he pitched the six innings against Baltimore. Does he get another start?
It's 11 1/3. It depends on what happens with the market. I mean, throughout the season, 1,000% he's probably going to get another five starts if he's the guy. But it all depends on what Cashman does.
Yeah. KC is coming into Yankee Stadium for a four-game series. KC sports the worst team ERA in baseball and has scored the least amount of runs in baseball.
So we're going to get our asses kicked.
Is that what you're saying? Recipe for a 110 loss season. You score the least amount of runs and give up the most amount of runs. Probably a four-game series split if you're gun to my head right now.
You know, I feel like this is one of those series where they're going back home. They just left, but they're coming right back. And they're playing a bad team. And they could really, really use this as a pounce series. Just jump all over this bad team at home. Get the crowd behind you because you know the crowd is lagging a little bit at this point. The whole Gary Sanchez debacle, the whole fact that you had a bad Friday night with the Mets, and then obviously this Tampa series. Like, this is a really good opportunity for them to get some people in their good graces and to capture some momentum. So.
Six more games before they go to right? Isn't it six games before they go to Fenway? No, I guess there's more before they go to Fenway, isn't it?
They go on the weekend, right? So, however many games next weekend, not this weekend, the following weekend.
Right. So they've got the four games against the Royals, and then they've got the two games against Baltimore, and then they have an off day, and then they go to Boston. So six games before the Boston series, you need to win all six of those.
I mean, this, if you don't see a better setup than this, than the Kansas City Royals at home and then the Orioles with the team without Britton or Machado, I mean, come on. You gotta absolutely do that. Josh Rogers is going to come out and throw a complete game shutout. That's what's going to happen.
Of course he is. And Cody Carroll is going to blow him away in the ninth inning. Yeah. Quick note, CC Sabathia was pushed. He's going to start on Friday, so that means he has 13 days off in between starts. He's at 100 innings this year. They're clearly trying to monitor his innings just to keep him healthy. They need him to stay healthy.
They absolutely need him to stay healthy. I think a guy like CeCe, this is the type of move that's very good for a man's body who's 37, 38 years old. So good. It's a solid move.
He does have those contract incentives where he can make up to $2 million in bonus money if he reaches 155, 165, 175, and 185 innings. So that 155 would kick in the first $500,000 bonus. He was going to be close regardless. He's going to be very close now that he's really essentially skipping a start. Just might factor in towards the end of the year as the Yankees are maneuvering with the luxury tax. They're adding $4.5 million for Britton. They're agreeing to pay all of that. So extra $500,000, $1 million here and there might help.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's something to think about. It's not total chump change when you're looking at it, even for a guy like CC Sabathia. But we'll see. I think it's going to be tough for him to reach those milestones.
Indeed. All right, that's going to do it for the two of us. But the segment with Connor and a Rail Riders update and a lot of stuff going on there is coming up next. So stay tuned for that. Scott, any last words?
Yeah, just a couple of things to look at for the segment with Connor is I know how long have we been talking? An hour? It seems like we try to do. The half hour, 45 minutes.
I knew this was going to happen.
It just continues in.
Too much to talk about.
But Connor and I actually spoke for about half hour, maybe even more than that too. So long episode today, but cut it in half if you want to. But we did. We touched on Justice Sheffield, Chance Adams, Clint Frazier, how he's feeling, Tommy Canley, like what in the hell is going on with him? Billy McKinney, Drury, and then talked about the trade. So a lot of information from Connor. It was fun to talk with him and get kind of the details of what's going on in Scranton. But other than that, man, we just need to take advantage of what's in front of us and win some ball games. Hopefully we have a solid mood coming in on Monday morning for our next show.
Good stuff. Submit mailbag questions and voicemails for that next show. We'll talk to you guys on Monday. I'm as free as Andy Dufresne. We're standing in the rain after escaping Shawshank coming out the drain. And these days, you ain't holding me back. I'm flowing these raps. The pain, it ain't a thing when the music in my brain I maintain. Too straining, we staying on the path of the rappers. Tried to add it up. All right, guys, I am now joined with Scranton Wilkes-Barre beat writer. Yeah, you can follow him at RailRidersTT on Twitter, Connor Foley. Connor, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate you taking the time, man.
Thanks for having me again.
So I think there's a lot of people that are very interested in what's happening in Scranton right now because the Yankees are looking for, first and foremost, some warm bodies to throw a bunch of innings towards the end of the back of the rotation. And the Scranton shuttle seems now it's turned into a starter's bus rather than a reliever's bus. So before we get into all the pitchers and each individual guy, can you give us just kind of an overview of what's happening in Scranton with the team and how the guys are looking down there?
So they started off kind of slowly, which is weird because, I mean, I have people tell me on Twitter every time I tweet out a lineup that this team could beat the Mets in a five-game series every night. But they were sub-500 for most of the first half of the season. Finally got back above 500 a couple, maybe like a week or two before the All-Star break, went into the All-Star break up five games, and then they played, they came off a road trip through Toledo and Columbus that was really good for them. I forget if they were like 7-1 or something like that. It was a really good road trip for them. But they've been playing a lot better recently than they were in the start of the season.
It seems like, I mean, it's probably tough. I mean, this has been the case over the past few years, but there's just so much turnover with this team because of the, you know, the big club. And it seems like they have so many quality players that a lot of these guys keep getting pulled up and pulled back. And, you know, there's fluctuation with double A too. So I'm sure that's one of those things that the team has to overcome, is not seeing the same guys every day. You never know who's going to get plucked out or even sent down to make room for somebody else. And it just seems like there's a lot of, it's a revolving door in Scranton.
Yeah. I was actually talking to Luis Tessa about that the other day before he went up. Just like he mentioned how he was just more comfortable this year in this role. And he said it kind of took him a while to get adjusted to going up and down and starting on a regular routine and not going on a regular routine and coming out of the bullpen and stuff like that. So I think it's harder than the fans maybe realize. They think, you know, Scranton's 2 hours away. How difficult could this really be for these guys? But there's a lot that goes into just hopping on the Scranton shuttle.
No, it's different when you're playing a ball game in a minor league city and then you're going to the Bronx or you're going to wherever they're playing that weekend too. So it's a big difference in that sense too. You mentioned Luis Sessa. He's obviously now come up, taken Domingo Herman's spot in the rotation. The last two outings have been pretty good. I mean, I think I've always thought he's had really good stuff. And his last two outings, 11 and a third innings, only that one home run today. So you're talking about his confidence. It does seem like he's building that confidence up to a guy that's more comfortable on the mound too. I mean, not just in the situation. I'm sure all of that goes into, you know, how productive you can be on the mound itself. But what have you seen from him when he's been in Scranton on the mound?
It's crazy because I think he opened the season on the Rail Riders roster. And then I think he's pitched maybe twice for the team this year.
Right.
So, but I mean, the Sessa that we saw last year was always a guy who was like, this stuff is so good. How can he only be getting okay results? Mm-hmm. And this most recent start that we saw him, which was the start right before he started today, he was unbelievable. His fastball's always been really good, mm-hmm. but his slider in that game and the game before in Baltimore, there was just something different about it. And I asked him about if he changed anything about it, and he said no, but just that he was kind of throwing it a little bit slower, and he didn't exactly have a reason for why he was throwing it slower. But if you, like, it was probably like maybe a mile and a half or 2 miles difference on the slider. And I don't know if that was doing anything to it, but it was really, really good in Baltimore and in here. So I don't know. I mean, he's always been a guy that I've liked just because all of his pitches were so good. And, like, you don't see guys like that through this circuit. That's why, like, even with Herman, too, and these guys have stuff that is just not around in the rest of this league.
That's the thing. I think we talk about this stuff a lot, the swing and miss stuff, especially with Herman. I mean, his swing and miss stuff, you look at the numbers, and it's, when he's pitching in the big leagues, the swing and miss numbers are some of the best in Major League Baseball. At least they were, you know, for the beginning part of when he was up. I know he slipped a little bit towards the end, but I mean, he's got that kind of stuff. He can miss bats, and that's huge in the pros. It's all about putting it together. Sessa, I think, you know, he's been kind of hindered by that one pitch or the one bad inning. You know, he gets into the third or fourth inning and then he'll make a mistake pitch. And he did make a mistake pitch today, but it wasn't a crazy hurt. It was a two run shot, but I thought he pitched really well otherwise. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the guys that you have seen more often down there, the two names that obviously come to mind the most And we'll get to the trade in a little bit too, to talk about some of the guys that have left Scranton now. But Justice Sheffield and Chance Adams. First with Justice Sheffield, a lot of people are pining for Sheffield to come up to the bigs, especially because the Yankees are now looking for somebody to fill the back of that rotation, whether it's via trade or, you know, if it were to be a call up like Sheffield or Adams. But there's, you know, there's obviously work that the Yankees want to see. What are the big things right now that the Yankees are looking to see from Sheffield so that he can make that jump? Because Boone has said that he is close to being an option.
Yeah, I was, it's weird because Sheffield, I forget what the exact numbers, but it's something like 6 or 7 straight starts that he's made on the road. So we haven't seen him pitch since early June. He's finally going to pitch in front of us on Friday. So that's going to be pretty cool. But he did throw a side here last homestand, and I was kind of listening into it, and it was just like, it was so cool because anytime you hear pitchers like break down what they're trying to do is like, I don't know. I think it's awesome.
Right.
But Sheffield was kind of saying, you know, he can't afford to walk more people than he's walking right now. So that's number one, is that he kind of, he's teetering at, too many walks for a starter. He's like right on the edge. So obviously he wants to kind of knock that down.
He and Chance Adams actually aren't that far off as far as ratio goes. I mean, they're pretty darn close. And I know that's one of the big knocks on Adams too. So it's definitely one of the cleanups.
Right. Right. Yeah. Justice, his last start out, he had a super long break in between starts. So because of the futures game, and he only threw like an inning at the futures game. So I'm not really going to put too much stock in his last time out, but he did struggle with the fastball command in his last start out. But he's the kind of guy that, like, I don't know if he's ready to go up, but if they called him up and he went out and threw 7 shutout innings, it wouldn't surprise me in the least, because the best thing Sheffield has going for him outside of the mid-90s fastball and the ridiculous slider is the guy just wants to win and wants to win at anything. Like, I saw him in the backfield in spring training, and he got pissed because I forget if somebody hit a home run off of him, but he was legitimately disappointed that he gave up a hit in an extended spring, or not an extended spring training, but a minor league spring training game. I think it was even like an inter-squad game. But he's just so competitive, and I think that's going to help him out in the bigs in a big way.
I mean, you got to believe that that's one of those attributes that CC Sabathia saw, because you know, from everything he said, that they've become pretty good friends, and he's become kind of a mentor to Sheffield. I know they go fishing when they're down in Tampa in spring training and things like that. So, you know, that competitiveness, obviously, that those two guys. That being that and being a lefty, they have those in common. So that's a nice little guy to look up to as far as competition and success in the bigs. Now, is he? You said the command issues are with the fastball. Is he able to locate that slider when he wants to? Is the fastball the lone issue, or is he having command issues with multiple pitches?
It's kind of like he'll just lose it for a batter or two every now and then. It's not like a game-wide thing. It's like, out of nowhere, he'll walk a guy on 4 pitches.
Right.
So I think it's kind of like that is the stuff where he's trying to fine tune stuff and make that jump to the next level. Like, you really shouldn't walk a guy on 4 pitches just out of nowhere when you're already like dominating the team for 5 innings. Yeah. So I think that's one of what I mean by his command was a little off. I mean, the last start was, I think, because of the light off, but even in the last start, he pitched really well numbers-wise. So he's just like, he's a grinder, and that's where the competitiveness comes in.
Got it. Have they talked about innings limits or pitch limits or anything like that for him? Because obviously that's going to be, you know, a big determining factor in how much, if he were to show up in the Bronx, how much he'd be able to contribute, whether it would be something out of the bullpen or, you know, if he's able to be used as a starter down the stretch. You know, any insight on how the Yankees are kind to, you know, protecting his arm at least for this year?
So I asked Bobby Mitchell that a couple days ago, maybe it was yesterday, but Mitchell said he's sure that some guys have limits, but he's not sure what the limits are or who has them. So it's a very, very, you know, by the book answer from
yeah,
Bobby.
Super vague.
But I'm sure it's the Yankees. They know what they're doing with protecting their young arms, and I don't think it. I mean, you can look at how many innings Sheffield threw last year, and you know that he's probably got a innings limit that's going to be within reach at some point this year, because he really didn't throw too many innings last year. He did go to the fall league, right? And getting a couple games, but so I mean, I'm sure it's there. We don't know what the number is yet, but I would be shocked if he just, you know, free run, throw as many innings as you want to, kind of thing.
Yeah, so. No. I mean, I don't even think that's even remotely possible. I'm just wondering if they're eventually, if they do see him at that level where he's able to make these starts in the major leagues, if they're going to somehow control those innings a little bit, you know, in the minor leagues, especially if they see an opportunity to bring him up. It's going to be interesting because, you know, the way that the starting pitching market is in the major leagues right now, you know, Brian Cashman's not really looking at great options. And sometimes right. when you're looking within your organization, you know, there may be a better solution inside. Another potential solution would be Chance Adams. I know he was a big name last year. I think a lot of people wanted him to come up last year, but it seems like these walks, similar story here is still one of those things that he hasn't really cleaned up and maybe taken a bit of a regression. I guess this year, what's going on with Chance and how is he, how's he looking down there?
So media day, right before the season started, Tommy Phelps mentioned that Chance had surgery in the off season and nobody knew that this happened. And we asked Chance and he didn't really want to talk about it at media day other than to say that he had surgery in the off season. So then a couple of weeks ago, I talked to Chance more about it and he went pretty in depth as to what was going on. And he kind of said he was pitching through this thing for all of last year. And that's why we kind of saw like a slope downward in how he was performing in Double-A at the beginning of the year and how he was performing in Triple-A at the end of the year. It wasn't the same pitcher that was in Double-A. So, and then Kevin Reese was here last homestand, and I asked him about Chance specifically, and he kind of said like it's unfair to judge Chance off of this season because he's coming back from that surgery in the off season. So he kind of made it sound like they can't even judge where he's at right now. But I mean, just pushing past that, Bobby Mitchell's talked about how Chance needs to be more in his games, because he'll throw a really good game and then he'll throw a game where he's out after two innings. Or a bigger thing for Chance is like he'll get into a bad inning and the Yankees have a limit where guys can only throw 40 pitches in one inning and then they have to come out no matter what. So he's run into a couple of times like that where they've had to go to the bullpen just because he can't get out of one inning. He almost ran into that yesterday. His start was with a suspended game, but Tommy Phelps went out to talk to him. Next batter strikes out on three pitches and gets out of the jam. So I don't know how to judge Chance yet because we still haven't seen the guy that was there at Double-A, and Chance has said that the guy who was at Double-A hasn't shown up yet because, you know, he knows that he can throw harder than he's throwing right now because that's how he was in Double-A and Single-A and stuff like that. But so I think he would certainly like the fastball to be in the upper 90s where it was. But there have been flash. Chance has said that as he gets farther and farther away from the surgery that he feels better and better. So, like, there's been a couple starts here recently where his fastball was 93, 94, but now all of a sudden guys can't catch up to it. And it's got, like, that late life that Chance said he had in Tampa that was really good for him. So I think it's almost still, like, wait-and-see mode with him, even though he's going to be at AAA for a season and a half now. So I don't know with him.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I guess what bone spurs was the off-season surgery. You really didn't hear much about it. You'd think that would be in the elbow too. You'd hear some more about what was going on with his struggles there. there have been reports. One of our guys, Tom Hansen, wrote in to talk to you about too, that he was cranking the ball up, I guess, into the higher 90s as well. It seems like his velocity has been coming back, as you're saying. So that's something good. I guess we'll have to just keep an eye on that and see how he's pitching. I mean, he's got to understand at this point if he's got the ability to do that too, and you know, he's starting to feel healthier and healthier, then there's a massive opportunity in front of him. And it seems like there's going to be opportunity in the Bronx at some point down the stretch. I mean, there always is. Something always happens with starting pitching. You know, you can never have enough, and down the stretch, something happens. And you're usually needing a guy like this to come up.
Yeah. And like I asked Chance too, like, since he doesn't have the fastball, like, could there possibly be a silver lining in all this where he learns to pitch off of his slider and he learns to pitch off of his curveball and his changeup? And he's like, you know, yeah, that's obviously what he's had to do this year, but he would still, you know, he's not going to turn down being the guy that throws high 90s.
So as far as coming back from the surgery, is this just a conditioning thing at this point? Because if the surgery did what it was supposed to do, right? Like, the everything is cleared out, he should be good. Or are there still issues lingering from the Spurs? I mean, is that something that's still a concern, or is this really just him getting back to form and finding that velocity?
No. The surgery was fine. It's just it disrupted his off season.
Yeah.
And, you know, guys will say that, you know, it can be a minor surgery, but if it throws off what you're trying to do in the off season, then, you know, it throws off your year, no matter how minor a surgery it is. So I think it'll be interesting to see how Chance comes through next off season. Even if he does go up to New York this year, it'll be interesting, but we'll see if, like how he said, he feels better and better the farther he gets away from the surgery. We'll see if that's really true.
Another guy who's kind of fighting velocity and has been in Scranton for entirely, you know, longer than I think anybody ever expected is Tommy Kahnle. The reports were that, you know, he was healthy. He came back up, didn't look good, went back to Scranton, and has been, I guess, working on velocity and arm strength and conditioning that arm to get himself back to where, you know, where they're comfortable with him and where they saw him last year when he was a highly effective closer or a highly effective reliever. What's he looking like down there, and how's the velocity?
Velocity is weird. People ask me that, like, after every appearance, like, how's his velocity? And I don't know how to answer it, because it's in line with most of his career, but it's still slower than last year. But last year kind of looks like the outlier in his career. So I don't know what he was doing so well last year that he's not able to do right now. Like, it's still 95, 96, he'll hit a couple 97s down here.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously it was much higher last year. I forget what his average velocity was, but it was maybe like 97-ish around there. I'd have to look it up. But so he dominates down here because, you know, he's the guy who was dominating in the big leagues last year, and AAA is not going to be much of an issue for him, even if he's only throwing 95 or 96. So I don't really know what the deal is with, because he says that he's healthy, because that was the reason why he came down here in the first place, right? Was because he had a little bit of a shoulder thing. He was trying to pitch through that. But I don't know, because they passed him over so many times when they've needed a 40-man guy between, like, they call it Gallegos a bunch, they call it Sessa a bunch. So I don't know how to explain what's going on with Kahnle, but I mean, he looks fine. He doesn't look like he's pitching through any pain. The stuff is sharp. It's just a matter of, was last year an outlier, or is there a way for him to get back to what he was doing last year?
Yeah, it's a mystery. It really is one of those crazy things when you look at what he did last year. And I mean, theoretically he's healthy and he's still in Scranton, and they just went out and got another arm for the bullpen. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Let's quickly switch over to position players. Clint Frazier is obviously a guy who's been up in the Bronx a bunch this year, and a guy that is got a lot of Yankee fans excited. He is back in concussion protocol from what I have seen last. I guess he was diving after a ball and he came up lightheaded. Can you talk to me about that and how Clint is doing down there right now?
So it actually happened in Baltimore when Clint was running from second to third.
Okay.
And he collided with Jace Peterson, and he said he felt something there. And then, but he said he felt something, but it didn't feel like a full-blown concussion.
Mm-hmm.
So then he's sort of feeling crappy, and he is playing in that game for the Rail Riders, makes a dive, hits the grass, and then that felt like, I think he said that felt like a concussion. So he...
So head hit the ground also
know,
when he dove?
I think so. It's tough to, I mean, it didn't hit like severe. It didn't hit like he hit the wall in spring training. Like, it wasn't a bad hit. I think it was just the jolt more so of hitting the ground. I don't know if he's technically in the protocol anymore.
Right.
His diagnosis right now is something like post-concussion migraines.
Mm-hmm.
He just showed up back here today before the game, and he's going to do some baseball activity.
Oh, that's good.
So we'll see how he feels after that. I know that he's extremely frustrated with this stuff because you can't like rush the rehab or anything like that. You can't, you know, do your exercises if you pull a quad or something like that, you know?
Right.
There's no way to speed this up. And I think that's what's frustrating most, is like, he just wants to be playing and being a part of what they're doing in New York and helping them out up there. And he's such a good guy too. Like, that's the tough part, is just seeing him be so frustrated with stuff like this.
Do you see this as, because I mean, when you're talking about head injuries and concussions, and especially ones that continue to come back and linger over a period of time, I mean, that's as a person, first and foremost, that's a concerning thing. You're talking about the brain, the head, and you know, does he ever talk about that? Have the doctors talked about that? Whereas this is something that, you know, they're concerned because it's lasted so long, or now that it's reoccurring, is this something that he's going to be dealing with for, you know, a long time into the, is this going to be, you know, part of the narrative of his career? I don't know if doctors have touched on that or if they've even talked about that scenario with him or with you guys.
I don't think he's ever talked about like long-term stuff to us.
Yeah.
I think, he's just sort of focused on getting over this one, because I don't think that like concussions were a problem for him before that thing in Pittsburgh.
Right.
Or not in Pittsburgh, but against Pittsburgh. So I don't think he's necessarily worried long term. He's just worried, or not worried, but he's frustrated with the term and how this has kind of like resurfaced.
All right, Billy McKinney's another outfielder with Scranton that's come up to the majors, has gotten injured and has been back with the AAA club. It seems like he had a good opportunity and then unfortunately had an unfortunately timed injury. I mean, that's really all you can say about it. Some of these guys have just been unlucky. But he looks like he's having a really good year. I mean, he's you know, battled injuries in his career coming over from Oakland to Chicago, and then obviously to the Yankees. You know, he was coming back from some injury then, and now it seems like he's hit a stride with some power too, 13 home runs. So is this we're past the injury? Are we seeing the real Billy McKinney right now, where, you know, we're seeing some pop, and you know, it seems like he's turned a corner, I think, in his career.
Yeah, I would say overall, yes, he's in a little bit of a slump right now, but overall, yeah, like from the Billy McKinney that was struggling in the Cubs and A's organizations, like, that kid's gone. Like, Billy McKinney is a legitimate baseball player. Like, it's so fun to dream on what he would do with the short porch in Yankee Stadium,
right?
Because he's built for that. Like, he has such a good pole swing. And here at PNC Field, like, the foul pole is 330, and the other day he hit one out of the stadium, which is, I don't know how much farther past the foul pole, but it's a long way past the foul pole. People don't hit balls out of the stadium. down here to right field. So he's, I mean, there is so much to like about him. But I mean, it's crazy how much talent they got for Ross Chapman.
No, it's insane. Especially when you saw, especially when you see the deals that are coming out now for relief pitchers, it's for what they got for Ross Chapman is unbelievable. And Billy McKinney's a great dude too. We've had him on the show in the past, like really, really nice kid, super humble. So I'm glad he's looks like he's putting it together down there. And do these guys ever talk about, you know, the fact that they know what's up in the major leagues right now as far as outfielders and the fact that there is a barrier for entry at this point, really, to get into the club, you know, with the trade deadline swarming, is there buzz going around with some of these guys? Because it seems like Billy McKinney, you know, if I'm another team, I know what's in the Bronx and I see what Billy McKinney's doing down in AAA. And I know, you know, the pedigree he is as a baseball player, I'd be circling him and probably targeting him in any trade talks with Brian Cashman.
Yeah. I mean, you would think so, right? Like, yeah. Certainly someone would have to be taking aim at Billy McKinney in some sort of deal. But those guys don't really talk about going up and down that much. Because what are they going to say? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough, but I mean, the outfielders have gotten, you know, some chances this year. I mean, Clint's been up, even though, you know, they have Judge and Giancarlo and Gardner and Hicks, and Clint's gotten some opportunities. So, I mean, Billy obviously would love to not run into that wall in Toronto again, probably, but sure. He's also the kind of player who's going to run into the wall in Toronto if he's going to make the catch. So, I don't know. It's a tough spot for those guys to be in, but like the other day, they're sitting in the clubhouse, they're watching the Michael Kay show, and they're talking about whether they should trade Justus Sheffield, and it's Justus Sheffield, Billy McKinney, and Brandon Drury watching them talk about trading Justus Sheffield.
That's
a very, very weird situation, but I mean, their guys are not immune to what's going on with the trade deadline.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but, yeah.
Drury's an interesting guy too, to have in that mix, because I mean, for all intents and purposes, he's a Major League Baseball player and he's been stuck in Scranton in AAA for the majority of the season because of another strange injury with the migraines and the tunnel vision. And it seems like this guy can't catch a break, and he just got hit on the hand, you know, up at the plate yesterday. So it seems like Drury has also had some bad luck. What kind of an attitude does he have as far as in the minors? Has he been positive the whole time, just like pining for that next opportunity and working his butt off? I mean, he made the AAA All-Star team, which I'm sure was a bittersweet moment for him in his career.
Yeah. And he's been a professional about it, you know. Obviously, he wasn't happy with, you know, being stuck down here.
Yeah.
But, I mean, why would you be happy with being stuck down here, you know? I think it was – I can't imagine what it was like for him to come forward about the blurred vision, because it's like I can play through this. I've been playing through this. But if I tell them, there's a chance, you know, could my career be over? Because who wants a player with blurred vision? So he got over that. And then, I mean, he made the All-Star team down here. He hasn't played here much in the second half because he's been kind of up and down. But yeah, I mean, he's just another guy who they have so much depth here. It's crazy.
All right. Last thing before I let you go, Connor, is this obviously the trade for Zach Britton. I keep wanting to call him Chris Britton, but I'm going to say Zach Britton because it's his name. The Josh Rogers and Cody Carroll, two guys that came from the Scranton area that you're probably most familiar with. What do you see of these guys as major league players? It seems like Josh Rogers' name was circulating at some point for coming up and making a spot start at one point during the season. Is he more organizational depth, or does this guy have a good opportunity to be a potential starter in the major leagues of Baltimore?
Yeah, I would bet he's in the majors at some point this year.
Yeah.
He started off like unbelievable.
Right.
And he was supposed to be a guy who was going to be in the bullpen down here. And then Sessa went up and there was a spot in the rotation. Rogers got the spot and he didn't let go of it. And he leads the team, leading them in innings and I think wins. I think he's got six wins. But I mean, he was a guy who was super reliable for them, like a quality start kind of guy who, you know, might not blow a team away, but he's going to keep you in the game, for a long time. And he had some, he's such a good kid, and he, had some brutal starts this year. Like one start, he gave up 13 hits and 12 of them were singles. And he's kind of like, how does that happen? Yeah. Like nobody gives up 12 singles in a game. And then he went out in the second half of the season and did it again. But I mean, he's the kind of kid who's able to, you know, just kind of like laugh those off in disbelief and then go out there 5 days later and get ready to go again. He's also, a huge part of the clubhouse.
Yeah.
Like the guy who's friends with everybody in the clubhouse, the guy who everybody likes in the clubhouse. So I think that leaving those guys was tough for him, and for the other guys, seeing Josh leave was tough for them. But it's a good opportunity for him. It would have been, it's going to be tough for anybody to break the Yankees. So for him to go to a team where he's going to have an opportunity, I think he might be a little disappointed that he's leaving the Yankees right now because they drafted him, but it'll be good in the long run, probably for him. Carroll, wouldn't surprise me if he's up in the big leagues in a week. His stuff is, really, really good. The fastball, I think in the fall league, the reports for the fastball was at 100. And, Cody actually told me that he did throw 100 a couple times, but it's more so like 97, 98. And then he's got a slider that's like Betances light kind of slider. He can't control it as well as Betances right now.
Right now.
But it's like
Betances can control right now.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like Betances can use it as a, at a big league level.
Yeah,
Cody probably has to work a little bit on it, but I mean, there's been, I forget, it's one random game. Like Higgy was like, dude, you threw some sliders that like, I couldn't even see how they were moving because they were moving so much. So he's got really, really good stuff. And he'd probably, I mean, who knows? Maybe the Orioles flip him because I mean, they're probably not going to be competing for a little while here still. But, you know, maybe he pitches well this year, next year, and then teams want Cody Carroll again. And that's not bad for a guy who the Yankees took in the, I think it was 22nd round in the draft. So
I'd say that's pretty good value. Brian Cashman tends to do that, tends to find the value under places that people aren't even looking. So. Another notch on his belt as far as player development and the Yankees, really, because they've done a phenomenal job over the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. I think big step up in player development.
Yeah, I think I tweeted out that Rodgers was an 11th round pick and Carroll was a 22nd round pick the same year. So that's pretty good for one draft.
I agree. It took a little while for them to get
to that
point.
All-star.
Yeah, no doubt. Absolutely. Connor, I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time. Again, guys, if you are looking to follow the Scranton Rail Riders and follow Connor on Twitter at RailRidersTT. He is the one of the beat writers for the Scranton Times Tribune. Again, Connor, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Always fun having you on.
No problem.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.